भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्तं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। श्रीमद् भागवतम सेकेंड कैंटो फिफ्थ चैप्टर द कॉज ऑफ ऑल कॉजेस टेक्स्ट 31 तैजाशात् तु विकुर्वानान् इन्द्रियाणि दशा भवन् ज्ञान शक्ति क्रिया शक्ति बुद्धि प्राणस् च तैजसौ श्रोत्रम् त्वग् घ्राण दृग् जिह्वा वाग् दोर् मेध्राङ्घ्री पायवः तैजसात्तु विकुर्वाना इन्द्रियाणि दशा भवन् ज्ञानशक्ति क्रियाशक्तिर् बुद्धि प्राणश्च तैजसौ श्रोत्रं त्रघ्राणदृग्जिह्वा वाग्दोर्मेध्राङ्घ्रिपायवः तैजसात्तु विकुर्वाना इन्द्रियाणि दशा भवन् ज्ञानशक्ति क्रियाशक्तिर् बुद्धि प्राणश्च तैजसौ श्रोत्रं त्वघ्राणदृग्जिह्वा वाग्दोर्मेध्राङ्घ्रिपायवः तैजसात्तु विकर्वाणा इन्द्रियाणि दशा भवन् ज्ञानशक्ति क्रियाशक्तिर् बुद्धि प्राणश्च तैजसौ श्रोत्रं तघ्राणदृग्जिह्वा वाग्दोर्मेध्राङ्घ्रिपायवः तैजसात् By the passionate egoism. Tu, but. Vikurvanat, transformation of. Indriyani, the senses. Dasha, ten. Abhavan, generated. Jnana Shakti,
Jnana Shakti,
the five senses of acquiring knowledge. Kriya Shakti, the five senses of activities. Buddhi, intelligence. Pranaha, the living energy. Cha, also. Doijasho, all products of the mode of passion. Shrotram, the sense for hearing. Tvak, the sense for touching. Ghrana, the sense for smelling. Drik, the sense for seeing. Jubha, the sense for tasting. Bak, the sense for speaking. Do, the sense for handling. Medhra, the genitals. Anghri, the legs. Payavaha, the sense for evacuating. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ear, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. Please repeat after me. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ear, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The living condition in material existence depends more or less on one's intelligence and powerful living energy. Intelligence to counteract the hard struggle for existence is assisted by the senses for acquiring knowledge, and the living energy maintains himself by manipulating the active organs like the hands and legs. But on the whole, the struggle for existence is an exertion of the modes of passion. Therefore, all the sense organs, headed by intelligence and the living energy, prana, are all different products and byproducts of the second mode of nature called passion. This mode of passion, however, is the product of the air element as described before. Taijashattu vikarvanad indriyani dashabhavan jnana shakti kriya shaktir buddhi pranascha taijasho shrotrang tag ghrana drik jubha Bag Dor Medhrangri Payavaha. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ear, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Gaurnita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So here, Lord Brahma is explaining the material creation to Narada Muni. So, material creation as it is like the material nature has two aspects. The material nature has manifest aspect and unmanifest aspect. The unmanifest aspect is called avyakta, and the manifest aspect is called vyakta. In Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna explains that avyakta dini bhutani vyakta madhani bharata. The material nature was avyakta, and avyakta dini bhutani, everything was actually unmanifest. Avyakta dini bhutani and vyakta madhyani bharata. In the middle, the material nature becomes vyakta or manifested. So it was not manifest, and it became manifest, and then again it will become unmanifest. The general state, as Krishna is describing in Bhagavad Gita, is the material nature is generally unmanifest, but in the middle, vyakta madhyani bharata, it becomes manifest in the middle, madhyani. And then avyaktan nidhanan neva tatra ka paridevana. And everything will become unmanifest again. It was unmanifest, became manifest, and again it will become unmanifest. And here Brahmaji is explaining how the material nature becomes manifest. How initially there was only Mahat Tattva. Unmanifest from avyakta, Mahat Tattva becomes manifest, or first manifestation, the first creation, creative aspect is the Mahat Tattva. And then there are three modes of the material nature. And then, due to the influence of the modes of material nature and false ego, the gradual manifestation takes place. Those three modes are mode of goodness, mode of passion, and mode of ignorance. So the previous verse described how due to the mode of goodness, different demigods, first of course the mind, the demigods and other aspects become manifest. I'll go back to the previous verse. There are three types of ahankar. Vaikarik ahankar, taijas ahankar, and tamasa ahankar. These modes in the form of false ego, or the influence of the modes in the false ego. What is the false ego? Again, that's another aspect of creation. Actually, we can see that the Vedic understanding is so scientific and so profound. Like, everything in this material nature, again, is a result of ahankar. What is ahankar? Ahankar is the misconception of one's spiritual identity. The spirit soul in the material nature becomes activated in the form of false ego or ahankar. The spirit soul is the I, but the material concept of I is false ego. And that is the spirit soul. Spirit soul's activity in this, individual spirit soul's activity in this material region. So these ahankars are of, again, influenced by three modes: mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. So what happens due to vaikarika ahankar or in the ahankar, from the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifest as also the 10 demigods. So mind, the demigods, the bodily movements, the demigods controlling the bodily movements. Such demigods are known as the controller of directions. The controller of air, the sun god, the father of Daksha Prajapati, the Ashwini Kumars, the fire god, the king of heaven, the worshipable deity in heaven, the chief of the Adityas, and Brahmaji, the Prajapati, all come into existence. So, we can see how initially it was unmanifest, and from unmanifest stage, gradually manifestation takes place. The influence of mode of passion, mode of goodness, is generating all these, and then the next verse, today's verse, is describing by further transformation of the mode of passion, vaikarika ahankar and then taijash ahankar. Taijash means the mode of passion. Taijashattu vikarvanat. Due to the transformation of the mode of passion, what is produced? The sense organs. And how many sense organs are there? 10 sense organs. Those 10 are further divided into how many? 2. Gyanendriya and Karmendriya. What are the Gyanendriya? The knowledge acquiring senses. The knowledge acquiring senses are eyes, ears, nose, touch and tongue. And Karmendriya, the working senses, are Vak, Pani, Payu, Udar and Upastha. And Indriyani Dasha Bhavan. Dash means 10. So 10 indriyas, 10 senses were generated. And they are classified into Jnana Shakti and Kriya Shakti. Knowledge acquiring senses and working senses. The 5 senses of acquiring knowledge and the 5 senses of activities. Then what else is generated from the mode of passion? Buddhi. Buddhi and then prana, the life energy. So they are also generated out of mode of passion. Buddhi is generated out of passion. Prana Shakti is also generated from the mode of passion. Whereas mind, how is the mind generated? From the mode of goodness. Indriyani Dashabhavan, Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti, Buddhi Pranascha, Taijasho. So here, Taijasho. Taijasho means all products of the mode of passion. Products of the mode of passion. Plus, some other things are also. Uh, Jnanashakti, Kriyashakti, Buddhi, Pranascha, Taijasho, Indriyani, Shrotram, Tag, Ghrana, Drik, Jubha, Bak, Do, Medhra, Angri, Payavaha. So five knowledge acquiring senses here have been classified as ear, skin, nose, eyes, tongue. And what are the working senses? Mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and outlet for evacuating. So these are the 10 senses, plus buddhi and prana are generated from the mode of passion. So in this way we can see how scientific the Vedic understanding is. The personalities who are presenting this knowledge, they are not speculating. They know, and they are presenting the reality as it is. Who can be a greater authority than Lord Brahma? And Lord Brahma is speaking. So what should we do? Should we accept Lord Brahma's statements or think that these are fairy tales or some sort of mental concoction? Oh, somebody just concocted something and they just wrote it down. The question then is, does this or do these statements make sense, or do they sound nonsense? Do they make sense or are they nonsense? Naturally we can see that they make a lot of sense. And there, as we have always seen, that in the Vedic scriptures, these descriptions are always in conformity. They are not contradictory. You read here what has been stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, and you read Bhagavad Gita, there also the same statements are being made. Then Kapil Dev is describing the Shankha philosophy, the same statement is made. No contradiction. Although different people are making the presentation, they all say the same thing. Like in Ujjain, there are many colleges. And you go to different colleges in the chemistry department, if you go, you'll find that everywhere they are making the same statement. Isn't it? They are explaining that two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen makes water. Now, will any other college will claim that it is actually three atoms of hydrogen with two atoms of oxygen is making water? So everywhere they'll make the same statement. Why? Because the real knowledge, the real truth is one. And whoever knows the truth will say the same thing. Whereas the scientists, modern scientists, what they are saying, today they are saying one thing, tomorrow they are saying something else. Then day after tomorrow somebody else is coming and saying that no, he is wrong, I am right. Then another person will come and will say that yesterday what they said was wrong and what I am saying is right. So this is how they are always changing. Somebody comes and their whole process is based on that. You have to come up with something new to establish your authority. Like their way is that everybody else is wrong and I am the only one who is right. Newton is wrong. I am right. Einstein is wrong. I am right. It's happening. The whole science actually was, in a way, the entire science was based on Newton's preliminary finding. But now they are trying to prove that no, Newton was wrong. The Einstein is another personality who created a major revolution in the modern science. And now another scientists are coming and saying, no, Einstein is wrong. And in this way they are always changing. Whereas the Vedic concept is never changing. Brahma told Narada, when was that? Billions, not even billions, trillions, we can't even calculate, count. Zillions of years ago, Brahma told Narada. And what Brahma told Narada still holds good in today's world, even today. Why? Because it's the fact. What Brahma told Narada is the reality. And that's why it makes sense. And that's why it is never changing. Real knowledge is unchanging. It doesn't change. Like the sun comes up in the east. The sun comes up in the east. So is that's the fact since the beginning of creation. But you leave it up to the modern scientists, what they'll do? They'll try to prove, no, sun doesn't come on the east. That is what their statement is. The other day I came across one very wonderful statement. Somebody was making a statement about the physicists. He said, the physicist can prove that an elephant is hanging from a cliff with his tail tied to a daisy. You know what daisy is? Daisy is a small flower, a small white flower. So the scientist can prove that an elephant can hang from the cliff by the side of a mountain. An elephant is hanging from the cliff with its tail tied to a daisy flower. So that is what the modern scientists are trying to do. And nobody in its proper sense will take them seriously. That's why Prabhupada used to call them rascals. Rascals, they're cheaters, liars. They know that they are lying. They know that they do not have the knowledge. They do not have the right understanding. But they are trying to present it as the truth. And in this way, they are bewildering the whole world. Now in simple words, what is that called? That's called cheating. If they were honest, they would accept the statements of the Vedic scriptures. It's not that all the scientists are bad, but the thing is that the whole process has become so corrupt that even the good ones, those who are conforming into that system, end up causing damage to the human society. So, real knowledge, real wisdom is in the Vedic scriptures. And that's why the intelligent class of people will accept that. And from that point of view, then we can see who are the real intelligent people. The real intelligent people are the devotees of the Lord. Those who have accepted the Vedic scriptures. And that is why it is so important that these facts are presented to the intelligent class of people. Now, preaching means presenting it to the intelligent class of people. The real preaching depends upon this presentation to the intelligent class. So we should always make an effort. We should not wait for people to just come to our temple and accept the process of Krishna consciousness. We have to go and present it to them. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Lalita Vishakha Devi Ki. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki. We should not just wait for people to just come and take to Krishna consciousness. Then what will happen? In most cases we will find that some sentimental people will come and some pious people will come. Those who are by nature pious, only they will come to the temple. But we have to bring people, those who are not prepared, not ready to take to Krishna consciousness, those who are not taking to Krishna consciousness by themselves, but they're intelligent. And if we present it to them in a proper way, then they will accept it. Because they will see, yes, this is what makes sense. This is what makes sense. Actually, modern science, for that matter, doesn't even know that there are 10 senses. What to speak of 11 senses? They think there are only 5 senses, at the most. They're only concerned about the 5 knowledge acquiring senses. They don't have any idea about the working senses. Elements, they don't even know that there are 5 elements. They think only earth, the solid substance, and liquid substance, and air. Only these 3. They don't consider that fire is an element. They don't know what fire is actually. Like if you consider, the modern science is dealing with only solid substance. Different, their understanding of elements are the minerals. Or oxygen, different gases. Oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, carbon dioxide, or the metals like magnesium, aluminium, copper, gold, etc. They do not have any concept of what ether is. They consider that air is just oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, etc. The gaseous substance to be air. They don't have any understanding that there are airs like pran, apan, saman, van, and udan. The 5 airs that makes the body and soul function together. The soul's activity on the body is balanced or conducted by the 5 kinds of airs. That is what air. Prana is an air. Prana is air. that holds the spirit soul in the body. Apan is an air that makes the undesirable elements are extracted out of the body. The evacuation, passing urine, how does all these activities take place? As a result of the activity of the apanavayu. Then samana, vyana, udana, these are actually causing the nervous system to function, the artery system to function. They don't have any knowledge whatsoever about that. And then, what to speak of mind, intelligence and false ego. Mind, they actually have some sort of knowledge about the, or they try to derive some sort of knowledge about the mind through a branch of science called psychology. The science of mind, psychology, the function of the mind. But they don't know that mind is a subtle element. Mind is actually a material element. They think that mind is something that grasps the impression. Their understanding of mind is like a blank sheet, and it has two regions, or maybe it can be described as three regions: conscious, subconscious and unconscious. That is their understanding. The impressions that are perceived, it is conscious. The impressions that are there, but not perceived now, but sometimes it come up on the surface. Then that is subconscious. And the rest of the mind that is not covered, which is blank, is unconscious. To them, it seems, it makes so much sense. But to begin with, they don't know what mind is. And intelligence, they don't want to deal with that at all. Consciousness, they don't even want to deal with that. Now they are trying to probe into it. Some scientists are recognizing that there is a thing called consciousness. But they don't have any knowledge about the consciousness. What is consciousness? Actually, if they are sincere and honest, by taking the lead from there, they can come to the spiritual understanding. Where does the consciousness come from? What is consciousness? Can the consciousness be a product of chemical reactions? No. Consciousness cannot be a result of some chemical reaction. Actually, it's so complex for them that they don't even want to deal with that. On the other hand, we can see how scientific the Sankhya philosophy is. Sankhya philosophy is actually the branch which can answer all the riddles that the modern scientists are facing. Sankhya philosophy is so scientific, we can see, that it is analyzing the material nature in the most profound and most minute degree. What is the Sankhya is analyzing? There are five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. There are five senses: eyes, ear, nose, touch, tongue. And those five organs, sense organs, interact with the five elements. like ear interacts with ether, sound is produced. Air interacts with the skin, touch is produced. We feel the touch. What is touch? Touch is the interaction between air and skin. Then eyes interact with fire and the form is produced. We are seeing different things. Who sees? Eyes see that. But can the eye see if there is no light? We may have the most powerful eyes, but if it is pitch dark, will you be able to see anything? No. So it is actually an interaction between fire and eyes that the forms are produced. Then, water interacts with tongue, taste is produced. Earth interacts with nose and smell is produced. So due to the interaction between five elements and the five knowledge acquiring senses, five objects of the senses are produced. Please wake up, don't fall asleep. The five objects of the senses are produced. So how many we got? Five elements, five senses, five objects of the senses. How many we got? 15. And then there are five working senses. Mouth, hands, legs, and anus and genital. So five working senses. How many we got? 20. Then they consider there are three subtle elements. What are those three subtle elements? Mind, intelligence and false ego. Man, buddhi and ahankar. How many we got? 23. And then mahatattva. The substance, the ingredient for creation. The basic ingredient for creation from which the whole creation became manifest. How many you got? 24. Is there anything beyond that? What is that? Okay, so how do you prove that? Very good. They analyze the whole material creation in this way, in 24 considerations, but then they consider that all these are objective in nature. But can the object exist without the subject? Without the subject, can the object exist? So who is the subject? Who is the subject? Well, how do you know? Anyway, before that, okay, fine. Then all the problems are solved. If you're so submissive, then there won't be any problem. But actually we are dealing with individuals who are not so submissive. Mind you, they're scientists. They are non-believers. They're unsubmissive. In the Vedic aspect also, there are scientists like that. Those who want to analyze, those who want to figure everything out from their own perspective. There are individuals like that, and for them these branches of philosophy are there. Okay, now if that person is intelligent, what will he consider? That these are all objective. Now the objects cannot exist without the subject. So who is the subject? The subject is I. Yes? You're jumping. Wait for a minute. So then they consider that this I, the whole creation has been analyzed by these 24 considerations. Could he find the I there? Is the I there? Right? So, what is that I? I is the 25th consideration. Now, I is not a product of this material nature. Then, what does it mean? The whole material nature has been analyzed by this 24 consideration, and we couldn't find the I there. So, where did the I come from? The I came from another nature. Right? So what is that nature? Non-material nature. Hence, spiritual nature. Make sense? Now let us, as some of you are very submissive and took to Bhagavad Gita, accepted all the statements of Bhagavad Gita. Now let's go back to Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita also Krishna is making the same kind of analysis. Krishna is analyzing the material nature in not as elaborate as 24. He is saying that this material nature is comprised of 8 elements. What are those 8 elements? Bhumi, Rapo, Anolo, Vayu, Khong, Mono, Buddhi, Devacha, Ahankara. Right? 8. But then Krishna is saying, Aparaya mitastanya, Prakritim Vidhi me param, Jiva Bhutang Mahabaho, Jajedam Dharjate Jagat. This material nature, which is comprised of 8 elements, is inferior. Inferior nature of mind. But beyond this inferior material nature, there is a superior nature of mind. Okay, before that Krishna made one point, that this material nature comprising of these 8 elements is inferior, and the superior energy, the spirit soul, jiva bhutang, is dharjate jagat. This material nature is sustained by the spirit soul, jiva bhutang, jiva, living entity. So, don't we come to the same consideration? Subject and object, right? The material nature, the objective reality is comprised of 8 elements. And this objective reality is sustained by living entities, jiva bhuta. We all are here, therefore we are experiencing this, jiva bhuta. Jajedam dharjate jagat. This jiva bhutang are dharjate, sustaining this material nature. Prabhupada explained this dharjate as exploiting this material nature. What the jivas are doing here, they're exploiting this material nature. But they are coming from aparayamitastannam prakritim vidhi me param. There is a superior energy of mind, and these living entities are coming from that superior nature of mind. Make sense? When Krishna says something, naturally it will make sense. But unfortunately, foolish people do not want to accept the statements of Krishna. If they accepted, then their problem would be solved. They won't have any mystery unraveled. Everything will be manifest, everything will be crystal clear if they just accept these statements from the scriptures. So whatever is being presented in Srimad Bhagavatam is substantiated by Bhagavad Gita. Whatever the Vedic conclusions are, in this way, are substantiated by each other's statements. And this is how the absolute truth is revealed. There's no contradiction whatsoever. There may be some differences, some minor differences. Like, for example, Sankhya philosophy is analyzing the material nature into these 24 considerations. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is analyzing the material nature in simply 8 considerations. But the point is that the material nature has been taken into consideration, and then the ultimate conclusion is that material nature by itself cannot exist. It is sustained and it is supported by the living entities. And some modern philosophers actually do come to that conclusion also, in this way, that this nature is existing because I am. This nature is existing to me because I am. If I am not here, will it exist for me? This nature is existing to you because of you. Because you are here. Now, if all of us are taken out of here, if all of us leave this nature, there is not a single soul left behind. What will happen to this material nature? And that is the avyakta or unmanifest stage. So it goes further. The Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic scriptures are going further to analyze that the manifest and unmanifest aspect of the material nature is due to the presence of the living entities in the nature. When the living entities are taken out of the material nature becomes unmanifest, and when the living entities reappear in the material nature becomes manifest. So, and what causes the living entities to come to the material nature? The cause of living entities coming to the material nature is due to the glands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The original cause of creation, now let us go back to that. What is the original cause of creation? Mahavishnu's glands towards Prakriti or material nature. Mahavishnu's glands. So that is the cause of the manifestation of the material nature. Then Brahma Samhita is further describing what is that glands of Mahavishnu. That glands of Mahavishnu has been described as Sambhu, Lord Shiva. And what is Lord Shiva doing? It is through Lord Shiva that the living entities are coming to this material nature. Mahavishnu is glancing, and through his glance, the living entities are projected into the material nature. And then the result is the material nature is becoming agitated. What is this agitation of the material nature? That agitation of the material nature is the activation of the material nature. The modes of the material nature become active. Now, don't we see agitation and activity has some semblance, some similarity? Agitation and activation. Material nature becomes active due to the agitation due to Mahavishnu's glands. The material nature is becoming activated, agitated. And as a result of that, you see, the material nature was in a perfect inactive stage. And now the material nature is becoming activated. And what is the activation of the material nature? The three modes start to function. And here is the description. What is the result of those activation of the three modes? Due to the mode of goodness, the mind and demigods are generated. Due to the activation of the mode of passion, the senses, the intelligence and prana become manifest. And then we will see that how, due to the mode of ignorance, the elements of the material creation becomes manifest. And what can be more scientific understanding of creation than this? So, at least we should consider ourselves fortunate that we have been exposed to this most profound knowledge. And now it's up to us how sincerely we are going to enrich ourselves with this knowledge. How sincerely we are going to enrich ourselves. That is up to us. So that is, and that's why we have to go deep into this scriptures. That's why Prabhupada wanted us to study these scriptures. Not only study, study scrutinizingly. Scrutinizingly, in details, go deep into this subject, try to understand, read between the lines, try to get the meanings of this presentation, and then only it will come to us as a revelation. Spiritual knowledge is revealed, revelation. It will be revealed to us. This knowledge that we are receiving is not just knowledge, it's a revelation. We are not just collecting some information, but it's a revelation. Knowledge can be of two kinds. Collecting information is one kind of knowledge. And revelation is not just collecting information, it's seeing it. May not be with eyes, but seeing it internally, seeing the truth. And that is what happens when we go deep into these informations that have been presented in the Vedic scriptures. We will see the truth. We will not just collect some information here and there, but it will be inner perception, spiritual perception, not just intellectual assimilation, but spiritual perception. And now we have this opportunity to enrich ourselves with this information and dive deep into the subject matter and then see the reality face to face. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Krishna Ji.
Three modes of material nature. By their influence on the material nature, different products are developed. But the question is, what is exactly the source of the three modes of material?
What's the
source of the three modes?
Prakriti. Material nature is the source of the modes. The material nature is endowed with the three modes. Trigunatmika. This prakriti is trigunatmika. The prakriti nature has three modes in her. These three modes are of material. Well, as material nature, they're all one. But as the manifestation, when they manifest, they manifest in these three forms. They're there. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa. In the nature, everything is happening due to the three modes of material nature. Gunai karma, prakritik kriyamana, gunai. This gunai, plural. Three modes of the material nature. Yes, Gangana.
Intelligence should come from Shakti Kamakara and mind should come from Radish Kamakara.
That you may think, but should you take your authority or Brahma's authority? To you it may seem like it's coming out of intelligence is coming out of goodness. And the thing is that the intelligence is actually activating. You see, what does mode of passion do? Mode of passion causes our activities in the material nature. Now consider what does intelligence do? Intelligence provokes us to do something and not to do something. Isn't it? Sankalpa and vikalpa. Resolve and reject. That's what intelligence is doing. So this is how we have to see that actually intelligence is out of passion. It's not that to us it seems that's why it is. Rather it is, now we have to see it the way it is. Okay, next is Sitaram.
We were talking about the light errors, and I was reading yesterday how mental disease arises out of the disturbance of the errors, and our psychologists, with their understanding of this, can actually stabilize people through yoga. So this can actually, our whole science of psychology can have a whole different volume of understanding of this new, with basic therapy.
Yeah, right. That's true, and that's what Ayurveda does. Ayurveda just brings the balance. It's, you know, the Ayurvedic medicine are simply causing the balance. Like as you said, due to the imbalance of air, certain diseases are caused, or mental diseases are caused. And if those balancing of the air can, if we can balance the air, then there won't be any mental disease. Mental disease is caused by the imbalance of air, and physical diseases are caused by imbalance of three elements in the body, mucus, bile and air. And the Ayurvedic science simply just rectifies the imbalance. And this is how they cure the disease. And what's your next point?
Second comment you raised was, you were talking about the presentation to the intelligent class of men. Now there's a difference between pseudo-humility and insipidness. I generally found that devotees have the tendency to think that I have to be humble. But Srila Prabhupada made the point that, you know, we have to be humble in certain instances, but in other instances we have to be very forceful in presenting the science to the demons. Because we should acknowledge they are actually demons. And that compassion should not be insipid. Because
yeah.
When you're insipid, they will simply take advantage and say, what is the person doing?
Right. Right, very true. Don't become humble in front of a ship. Right. Or rather, the point is, like, when you have an unsubmissive opponent, if you become humble, he'll take advantage of you. Right. So those who are unsubmissive to Krishna, a devotee's business is to become like a lion in front of him. Right? And he is submissive, he is humble in front of a devotee. Become submissive to a devotee, not the other way around. A lion in front of a devotee and like a donkey in front of a demon.
Simply manifested a whole city by mantra of Srimati Devaputi. Now, the confused person and say, why is God engaging in this huge, elaborate system of creation? And why didn't he say poof, and there was the material world? Why this long process that actually confuses people who basically have no understanding of God?
Yeah. The thing is, you see, like, to Krishna, it's only a matter of his glance. To him, it is not that, you know, such elaborate process of gradual changes, right? For him, it's only a matter of a glance. But from our perspective, it is a gradual transformation, right? I mean, for him it is, let there be light, and there was light. Right? He didn't have to create a generator and look for some gas from get the supply of diesel, right? And start the generator with a handle. And the generator started to move, produced electricity, and then Krishna went to the shop, bought some light bulbs, and fixed them on the sockets. And then he switched it on, and then there was light. It's not like that. For him it was just, he just said, let there be light. Or he didn't even say it. He just thought, let there be light, and there was light. But for us it may sound like a long drawn out process, but that is because of our idiotic brain system. Dull, insipid, as you said, non-dysfunctional, somewhat gray matter, which resembles more like dried out cow dung. So, yes.
When you mentioned that about the glance of Mahavishnu, that is a manifestation of Lord Shiva. So, we hear from Sita that there are actually two manifestations. One is Sadashiva and one is Devadutta, of which Lord Shiva is. So, can
you... This is the aspect of Lord Shiva in the material nature. Sadashiva is not in the material nature, he is in the spiritual sky. That aspect of the Lord, I mean the Lord Shiva, is in the spiritual sky. His glance is described as not as Sambhu. Krishna Balaram, you had a question?
Bharati mentioned that we see the light, this interaction between Maya and our eye, but we can see the dark. But some creatures are there, those can see only darkness. So how we can justify this?
Yeah, they see what is darkness to you, right? Like an owl. Because we cannot see that level, it appears to be dark to us. But the thing is, it's not darkness. To the owl it is not darkness. To the owl it is light. See, the light again, if you consider the light, it has a vast range. We are seeing only between violet and red. Right? Between the violet and red, that range is visible to us. To some other creature, it is below, and to some other creature, it is above red. Below violet or above red. So different creatures have got different ability. But the thing is, for eyes to see, isn't it common sense? For eyes to see, you need light. Without light, can you see? Can an owl see without light? For the owl to see also needs light. But that light may not be perceivable to us. Rather, what is perceivable to us, that is dark for the owl. Because their eyes do not register the light in that region. बुद्धि के द्वारा
मन का नियंत्रण,
हाँ बुद्धि अगर सही होगा तो मन का नियंत्रण करेगा। बुद्धि जब आध्यात्मिक चेतना प्राप्त होता है, जब बुद्धि भक्ति अर्थ का द्वारा प्रभावित होता है, तभी केवल वो मन को संयत करता है, नहीं तो नहीं सकता। नहीं तो बुद्धि मन का दास है, मन बोलता है मैं ये चाहता हूं, बुद्धि बोलेगा चलो अगर ये चाहते हो तो ऐसे ऐसे काम करना चाहिए। Mahatattva is the basic ingredient of material creation. You see, it's like this. Material nature is Krishna's external energy, right? When the material nature begins to become activated, then the first thing that appears, or the first transformation of the activation, or the first product of byproduct of the activation is Mahatattva. And then, you know, gradually it becomes more and more activated. Yes?
The time is progressing so fast. The people, their perception changing. So I've seen in the field of preaching that we need more stuff to have this cutting edge effectivity in our preaching. So in order to do this, we need some external thing, kind of stuff to read. But I've seen that some devotees, they say that you are in Maya, you are studying all this nonsense. But this is just one step. We present our Krishna consciousness in their language. So how can we make it honest?
You see, in order to convince them, you don't have to become a pandit. In order to convince them, you have to have the faith. The conviction doesn't come from scholarship. Conviction comes from faith. The deeper your faith, more effective it will be, more effective your preaching will be. For example, once I told Srila Prabhupada, I expressed the desire to study Sanskrit. Prabhupada said, what's the use? Now Prabhupada first asked, why? Why? Then I tried to give him various reasons. Then Prabhupada, each reason I gave, Prabhupada reacted by saying, what's the use? What's the use? Then finally Prabhupada told me that we do not have to become pandit to preach. In order to preach, we do not have to become pandit. We have to become devotees. He said there are so many pandits, so many scholars, but they are not preaching. And then he told me that devotee's business is to preach the process of Krishna consciousness with whatever knowledge he has acquired. Whatever he knows, he should utilize that for preaching. And then he pointed out that we don't actually preach with our ability. The preaching, the effectivity of the preaching lies in Krishna's will. Sometimes you will see that we preach so effectively to somebody, he doesn't become a devotee. We may think that, oh, I preach so nicely, now tomorrow he'll move into the temple, shave up and become a full-time devotee. But we see that he's just a waste of time. On the other hand, sometimes we come across people who did not actually, who seemed that, who was not at all favorable, and we had been very offensive to him. We chastised him. We insulted him. And one day we see that he moved into the temple. So, this is how we realize that our preaching is not a result of our own endeavor, our own efficient endeavor. It is actually up to Krishna. And you see, Prabhupada told me that there is no need to study anything. He said, whatever you learn, that's good enough to preach. And mind you, Prabhupada was, you know, very, very concerned about the effective propagation of Krishna consciousness through preaching. And it doesn't mean that we... Then Prabhupada made another point. He said, you study my books and you'll learn Sanskrit. To study Sanskrit, we don't have to go somewhere and learn the language. Prabhupada said, you study my books and you'll learn Sanskrit. And read Prabhupada's books, I mean, naturally, like, when somebody is systematically studying Prabhupada's books, that is desirable. That's why we have different courses. Prabhupada himself actually organized that. Prabhupada himself directed, instructed that Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarvabhauma, different courses, and based on his books. And when you have a proper understanding of the scriptures, naturally your preaching will be more effective. But one thing I can tell you, I started to preach 3 days after joining the movement. Some guests came to Mayapur. Those days, very few people used to come to Mayapur. Mayapur was very remote those days. So one family came and I was preaching to them. And then the man asked me when I joined the movement. And I said 3 days ago. And I could see that he was visibly disappointed. And preaching is a challenge, actually. Preaching is exciting. Like, those days our spirit was very high and our tendency was to smash everybody. Especially the Mayavadis. The other day I was telling Priyavrata, he was in Priyavrata and Radharani was in Manali recently, and I was remembering, I was in Kulu. Kulu is close to Manali. I didn't go to Manali, but I went to Kulu. And I was invited by a very big man. I met him in Chandigarh in 79. I joined in 77, 76, say, 3 years. 76, 77, 78, 79, about 3 years in the movement. And that person also invited some other Mayavadis, sannyasis. There were quite a big group of them, and I was the only devotee there. But I was staying in his house, whereas those people were staying in a guest house. So I think they were a little envious of me that I was getting a royal treatment, whereas they were, you know, not subjected to that kind of treatment. So they used to make fun of me in a way. Not in a gross way, but in a subtle way. And I used to just tolerate. And then one day, one of the younger guys, you see, I used to take prasad with them. I used to stay in this man's house, Mr. Ramesh Singh. He was one of the richest men in Kulu. But the prasad I used to take with him. They used to cook for the sannyasis. So one evening I was late for prasad. And so this one guy was serving me. He was young. He was, I think, one of the brahmacharis of one of the assistants of the sannyasi. He was serving me the prasad. And he started to kind of, in a half-joking way, he was making this point that I am a personalist. I haven't been able to go as far as the impersonal aspect. So this was too much, So I told him, "Did you read Bhagavad Gita?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Do you accept Bhagavad Gita?" He said, "Yes." "Do you accept every statement of Bhagavad Gita as Krishna's, as the statements of Krishna, as the absolute truth?" "Yes." And I said that there, when Krishna says, "Klesho adhikotara stesham, abhyakta shakta chetasham, abhyakta hi gatir dukham, dehobhad viparivartit." What does it mean? The abhyakta shakta chetasham, what do they get? Is klesha. Now, do you want klesha or do you want ananda? And he was stumped. So, I think he went and told these guys, the bigger ones. And so in that note, they brought up some points. I mean, in a half-joking way. And Ramesh was there also. And so I just gave them a full dose. And although they were much older, much senior, but they were all, because they don't have, their knowledge is so shallow. And so with them I just said that, look, and they accepted it actually, and they became quiet with acceptance. And I actually pointed out the reality, the spiritual reality being variegated. Through that example, that Krishna is saying about the material nature, urdhamulam adhasakham ashattham prahur abhayam chandangshi jashapatrani jastam vedashapedam. So, what is that urdhamulam? Where is the tree that has its branches, that has its root upwards and branches down? That has been explained later on, that this material nature actually is a perverted reflection of the spiritual sky. So the tree that we are seeing in the material nature, the variegatedness that we are seeing in the material nature, is actually the reflection of the spiritual reality. It is not that the spiritual reality is devoid of form. The spiritual reality is full of form, full of variety, full of variegatedness. But material nature is a reflection, but the real reflection can exist only if it is existing in reality. Reflection of a tree with green leaves, red flowers and yellow fruits, if we see that in the reflection, we have to understand that in the real tree, the leaves are green, flowers are red and fruits are yellow. So the material nature being a reflection must be reflecting what is there in the spiritual sky. They became quiet after that. I stayed there only for 3 days or 4 days. And I was telling him, Ramesh was so, Ramesh Singh, he really wanted me to be there in Kudu at that time. There was a beautiful temple on top of a mountain, and he was telling me that, why don't you stay here? I'll arrange this temple. I mean, you take over this temple. And of course, you know, it was not possible. Now Priyavrata wants to set up a center in Manali. He fell in love with that place. And I can understand. It's such a beautiful place, especially in summer. You never been there during winter. I said, you haven't been there in winter. That will be another story. Yeah. I like the idea, because in summer, I was telling Priyavrata, in summer, for many devotees, this place becomes very cold. I'm sorry, very hot. So they need to go to a cold place. So maybe during the summertime they can go there, and in winter we can close it down. That's why I told him that not to set up a temple, but have a preaching center, and he's very keen on having a hospital. So we can close the hospital down in winter. We can operate only during the summertime. And especially it will be very effective preaching. Like I remember, when I was with Rishikesh, I was in, with Srila Prabhupada in Rishikesh. Of course, those days I was not really going out to preach. But there were some sannyasis, two sannyasis from South America, known as Pramana Swami and Biraha Prakash Swami. And they made a few young Westerners into devotees just in a few days. So, I mean, those places are very good for making devotees, Western devotees. Because they come, I'm sure, how many Westerners were there at the time? Many, right. Actually, during my early days, I mean, before I became a devotee, many of my hippie friends used to come to Manali. I never been to Manali. But they used to tell me how beautiful it is, and there's a valley of flowers. There's one valley that is just full of flowers actually in summer. It used to be so beautiful. And of course, you get very good hashish there. That is the reason for the attraction. Those who are coming, we are happy about that, yeah. But we should not be completely satisfied, yeah, and complacent, yeah.
So my question is that Mahabharata was written especially for this age of Kali, and in India it's completely regarded as an apology. And now the creating it, you know, that Satyavati was himself conceiving the womb of a fish, and Vyasa was conceived out of wedlock, and babies were children were born out of Lasco Mountain, attacking the river, and so on. How to convince that it seems so inconceivable? So how to convince that this is actually reality? It did happen at a different time, with different principles.
Like, you see, what the scriptures are doing is presenting the reality as it is. Some reality will be in conformity with our moral codes or with our acceptance. Some will not. But you know, we have to accept it. It's just, you know, we can't accept half the chicken and reject the other half because, you know, it doesn't feel good. Like, you have to take the whole package, right? But the main point is that, you see, in one hand it's so scientific, and at the same time, when this kind of things are presented, we have to understand that, you know, they have their relevance. And that's why, you know, like sometimes, you know, people think that it is just, you know, so many stories, so many ideas have been put together. Like, Vasudeva is not one person. Their understanding is, you know, Indian scholars' understanding. Vasudeva is not one person. It is actually a title. So there are many Vyasas. But the thing is, you know, like, I mean, the Vyasa that we are talking about is the son of Parashar Muni. Right? It's not that the sons of Tom, Dick and Harry are accepted as Vasudevs. Right? It's just one person. Like, these are the things that, you know, we have to understand and we have to accept when we accept it. Now, while you are presenting it, you see, to people, there's no need to expose them to these kind of information that may cause, you know, any kind of reluctance or negativity in their mind. Like, when you are presenting, just present it to the extent that they can understand. When they start to read the books and come, by the time they start to read the books, you know, they have already taken the, you know, accepted it to some extent. And then it will not be difficult to make them understand. Right? Like, anyway, I mean, that is the thing. And I will, about preaching, like I just thought of one thing that Sitaram was telling me yesterday. His plan of preaching is that he'll have a big picture of Radha Krishna. And he'll make a challenge that this is God. You prove that this is not God. And I have all information about him. And in course of his presentation, he also made that point that God is black and his girlfriend is white. and I'm sure in South Africa he'll get a lot of mileage. And that is how it should be presented. We have to shake these people up, you know. Like they all are living in a very insipid, you know, insipid world. In a very drab, boring, monotonous and insipid world. And they need to be shaken up. They're drugged out actually. They're like zombies. And they have to be shaken up. And I think, you know, these are the ways that we have to actually take to in order to effectively preach to the people and to this world. This is God. And Prabhupada also appreciated when devotees took such steps. Like Hansa Dutta made a challenge. There was a atheistic person in Sri Lanka. His name is Dr. Kavur. And he was making all kinds of, you know, all kinds of humiliating statements about God. And Hansa Dutta, through a newspaper, made a challenge to him. That you come, let's get into open debate. And he backed out, he did not. And Hansa Dutta just smashed him through that newspaper. The newspaper was quite favorable. I think it was Deccan Herald or something. It was a favorable newspaper. And Hansa Dutta pointed out that you create life out of chemicals. Let us see, you're claiming that you're going to create life. You create life out of chemicals. All the chemicals are there. Whatever chemicals you need will supply. But you create life in 7 days' time. If you can't, then you are a useless nonsense. You're even worse than a chicken. Because a chicken can lay an egg and you can't even. So, and Prabhupada appreciated it. That yes, we should expose these people. Those who are simply bewildering the population. Right. And what are we doing? That's the thing. What are we doing? Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande.